failed.
Ah, experience, said the Hat.
No, really, I'm a terrible coward. I always run away.
Rincewind's chest heaved. Danger has stared me in the back of the head, oh, hundreds of times.
I don't want you to go into danger.
Good.
I want you to stay out of danger.
Rincewind sagged.
Why me? He moaned.
For the good of the university, for the honour of wizardry, for the sake of the world, for your heart's desire. And I'll freeze you alive if you don't.
Rincewind breathed a sigh almost of relief. He wasn't good on bribes or cajolery or appeals to his better nature, but threats were familiar. He knew where he was with threats. The sun dawned on Small God's Day like a badly poached egg. The mists had closed in over Ankh Morpork in streamers of silver and gold, damp, warm, silent. There was the distant grumbling of springtime thunder out on the plains. It seemed warmer than it ought to be. Wizards normally slept late. On this morning, however, many of them had got up early and were wandering the corridors aimlessly. They could feel the change in the air. The university was filling up with magic. Of course, it was usually full of magic anyway, but it was an old, comfortable magic, as exciting and dangerous as a bedroom slipper. But seeping through the ancient fabric was a new magic, saw-edged and vibrant, bright and cold as comet fire. It sleeted through the stones and crackled off sharp edges like static electricity on the nylon carpet of creation. It buzzed and sizzled. It curled wizardly beards, poured in wisps of octarine smoke from fingers that had done nothing more mystical for three decades than a little light illusion. How can the effect be described with delicacy and taste? For most of the wizards, it was like being an elderly man who suddenly faced with a beautiful young woman, finds to his horror and delight and astonishment that the flesh is suddenly as willing as the spirit. And in the halls and corridors of the university, the word was being whispered, sorcery. A few wizards surreptitiously tried spells that they hadn't been able to master for years, and watched in amazement as they unrolled perfectly. Sheepishly at first, and then with confidence, and then with shouts and whoops, they threw fireballs to one another, or produced live doves out of their hats, or made multicoloured sequins fall out of the air. Sorcery. One or two wizards, stately men who had hitherto done nothing more blameworthy than eat a live oyster, turned themselves invisible and chased the maids and bedders through the corridors. Sorcery. Some of the bolder spirits had tried out ancient flying spells and were bobbing a little uncertainly among the rafters. Sorcery. Only the librarian didn't share in the manic breakfast. He watched the antics for some time, pursing his prehensile lips, and then knuckled stiffly off towards his library. If anyone had bothered to notice, they'd have heard him bolting the door. It was deathly quiet in the library. The books were no longer frantic. They'd passed through their fear and out into the calm waters of abject terror, and they crouched on their shelves like so many mesmerized rabbits. A long hairy arm reached up and grabbed Casplock's Complete Lexicon of Magic with Precepts for the Wise before it could back away, soothed its terror with a long-fingered hand, and opened it under S. The librarian smoothed the trembling page gently and ran a horny nail down the entries until he came to Sorcerer, N, Mythical. A proto-wizard, a doorway through which new magic may enter the world, a wizard not limited by the physical capabilities of his own body, not by destiny, nor by death. It is written that there once were sorcerers in the youth of the world, but not may there be by now, and blessed be, for sorcery is not for men, and the return of sorcery would mean the end of the world. If the Creator had meant men to be as goddesses, he would have given them wings. See also The Apocalypse, The Legend of the Ice Giants, and The Tea Time of the Goddesses. The librarian read the cross-references, turned back to the first entry, and stared at it through deep dark eyes for a long time. Then he put the book back carefully, crept under his desk, and pulled the blanket over his head. But in the minstrel gallery over the great hall, Carding and Spelter watched the scene with entirely different emotions. Standing side by side, they looked almost exactly like the number 10.
"What is happening?" said Spelter.
He'd had a sleepless night and wasn't thinking very straight.
"Magic is flowing into the university,"